welcome to yet another iteration of Behind the Beard WNC, a podcast where four guys that sometimes are friends get together and bloviate and pontificate about various subjects. Oftentimes it's high school football, but it could go off the rails at any time, as you well know if you've listened. Today we continue our coaches interview series with the head coach of the Asheville Cougars. Court Radford will join us today. And as you've probably learned in prior podcasts, the podcast is basically for our entertainment. We hope you're entertained as well. But if you're not, there are other options out there. A lot going on. It's only been a week since we gathered, guys, but sports has taken off. Football's, you know, I'm ready for football to get going. We got the Stanley Cup finishing up tonight. So we watch the Florida Panthers collapse after going out 3-0 to the Edmonton Oilers.
From what I understand, that's a reverse sweep.
Reverse sweep. That's right. That's right, Mike. Yes, it is.
That's a big technology term there for you, Mike. I'm impressed.
It is indeed.
Mike, have you ever watched a hockey game live?
I have. We used to have a team here in town called the Asheville Smoke. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but we used to go the chant, "Let's go smoke," always made me chuckle just a little. Like,
okay. Big smoke guy.
Big smoke guy.
Yeah. Have you all ever been to the Carolina Hurricanes?
I have never been. I know Carson has.
I have, yes.
Wow.
Fun. It was all time. They scored two goals in the last 60 seconds to win. So that definitely helped the sports book and also
the sports book. Carson's favorite thing.
Yeah, but no. So we're here. Coach Radford, thanks for letting us come in and crash your, I'd say, probably biggest office I've been in.
I think so.
Now, you're all hearing. Carson is here with us. Carson Jones. Mike is here. Myself, Pat Pohl. We are missing somebody today, gentlemen.
Wait, who?
The name slips my head. He's overseas, or he's on some sort of a big trip somewhere, right?
A sabbatical of sorts.
Indeed. Lewis Anderson.
Fairview's favorite, Lewis Anderson.
Yeah, he's Fairview's favorite, all right. Holy cow. So we're without Lewis here tonight, but we do have Coach Radford. Yes, as Carson was saying, thanks, Coach, for joining us. Appreciate you coming out.
One thing to mention before we get started, we did set our record for the most downloads ever in a single month.
We did?
Month, yes.
People actually listen to this show?
There's a few, according to Coach Radford, a lot of people listening to us.
Wow.
You guys are popular.
You think so?
Popular.
I think year two is going to be much, much bigger than year one. But the question is, Coach Radford, spreads or no spreads? When we do the picks and we know that everybody sees them.
Oh, yes.
Tell me. Are you a fan of the spreads, or do you think that there should not be spreads in there?
I stopped listening after week four.
Okay. Okay.
So all right. I had enough to worry about. But, yeah, you got to have a spread.
You got to have a spread.
It would be easy to pick Reynolds over North Buncombe. Are they going to be about 50 or 49?
Here's the great
part. Makes you wonder.
Well, here's the great part now is that betting's legal, so I think more people probably understand the spread now.
I hope so, because that was mind-numbing last year when people were like, y'all picked Irwin to beat Reynolds. It's like, no.
With the spread.
With the spread, we picked Irwin to cover. But, yeah. No, so we're excited for year two.
So, Coach, thanks for coming on again. So, tell us, catch us up. What's going on over here at Asheville High? Last year we got here, you had a new weight room, you had some new facilities, and 12 new practice fields.
No, I'm just kidding about the practice fields. We still don't have the practice fields. Still figuring that out as we go. But yeah, I thought we had a good off season. I thought it was a big off season for us. You know, it was 5-6 is not something that is acceptable and okay here at Asheville. And you know, you can make a million excuses of why we went 5-6, but no one cares. And that's what we've told the kids, and the kids understand that. The good thing is most of the kids are back. Very very young last year, and so. This offseason was critical for us to, you know, develop those young guys that had already played a year under the Friday Knights. And like I said, a lot of them are back. And big thing was, you know, how much bigger, you know, can we get? We were very small last year. And not just, you know, weight room number small, but just, I mean, I had a lot of, you know, 210-pound kids on the offensive line and 140-pound kids catching the football and trying to make tackles. So, you know, but size a lot of times goes with the youth, you know. So, they've gotten bigger, they've gotten stronger, and they've worked hard, and we kind of reset, you know, the program of sorts, you know, and we held them accountable for breathing wrong. You know, we every single thing mattered, and the kids have really, you know, responded well to that. You know, I thought we had good spring practice, and we've had better numbers in summer than what we've had in the past. We've had good summer workout turnout so far.
You had a pretty big set of shoes to fill this year, though, with Nobo Shaw. He's heading off to Rutgers, right?
Yep, Noah heading up to Rutgers.
And then you had another young man, I think went to Montana.
Brent to Montana.
Anybody? What, anybody else?
Nick going to Guilford.
Okay.
And then, you know, Jeremiah Jones is going to try to walk on at NC Central. Trey Cotterton is going to try to walk on at UNC Charlotte. You know, but most of our guys, they all have plans. And that's what, you know, we really want to preach here is, you know, at least when they're graduating, they have a plan. We have one young man that's going to go to AB Tech and get into, you know, electrical, which is great. You know, I need him to come to my house as soon as he gets done.
He'll always have a job.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, the biggest thing is when they leave here, they have a plan, whether it's playing college football or not, you know, or going to college or not, but they have a plan.
That's good. That's good. So 5-6, would you say last year was your toughest year since you came to Asheville?
I think that's a fair statement. You know, it was tough for several reasons. You know, and probably now going through summer workouts this time around and comparing it back and looking at our numbers last year during summer workouts and seeing that, you know, the first day of summer workouts, we had 34 kids last year. And that should have been a red flag for me. You know, realizing, like, why am I having to go wake everybody up and get everybody? Like, what's the deal here? You know, and this year we got, I think we had either 68 or 69 kids at our first, you know, summer workouts, which is what it should be. You know, I know kids go on vacation, I know kids travel and all that stuff, but that should have been a red flag for us as far as, you know, the buy-in aspect. Yeah, and we played a tough non-conference schedule, and it's going to be tough again this year, you know. And the only positive I can say is we didn't lose to a bad team. You know, everybody that got us last year, they were all good football teams. You know, and there's some games, there's some plays I wish we had back in some of those games. But, you know, the biggest thing is, like I said, I had a lot of young kids out there, and they got a lot of experience. And now, you know, I hate it for kids like Noah, you know, who was one of the lonely seniors out there, you know, and he's out there with a bunch of puppies, you know, trying to get it figured out. You know, but that's how it works sometimes. And so I'm excited about this group, you know, and the work they've put in so far. But they're still, I told them the other day, there's still 40 days. And a lot can change in 40 days, good or bad, you know, between now and when we start up, you know, July 31st.
So 4-2 in the conference. So not bad. 2nd in 4A. You make the playoffs. Had a pretty tough first-round matchup.
Yeah, 4A West is tough.
it is.
4A West is a gauntlet, you know, and we go down and play Huff in the first round, and Huff, their JV quarterback had been offered by Arkansas.
The JV quarterback?
The JV quarterback.
Wow.
Yeah, so that just kind of tells you where they're at. Their kicker was pretty impressive to watch. You go there in pregame, and I had a good kicker, and we talked about that last time. Liam was fun to watch. This kid, we're watching film, and I'm watching him kick kickoffs, not like into the end zone or out of the back of the end zone. He's kicking them on the track. Yeah, so we worked on kickoff return little that week. Yeah, like he's going to kick it on the track. But they just they had a lot of kids, and they had a lot of big kids, and they were very, very talented, you know. And it was tough standing out there on the field and watching our kids come out and being like, "All right, boys, you're going to have to go," you know. But you know, they hopefully they use it as a learning experience, you know, because we're going to be in that same game again this year. You know, hopefully it's down the road. Hopefully it's not first round, you know, right. But we can't set ourselves up with a 5-5 record going into playoffs and expect to play somebody that's average in the first round, you know. So we really have to do a better job of setting ourselves up going into playoffs this year.
You know, with the very tough non-conference schedule next year, you know, have you guys been communicating about – are you guys really just taking it day by day right now? Or are you guys looking forward to, you know, obviously you want more wins in the win column, but, you know, are there things when you play Providence Day, are there things that you guys are going to be looking for as a coaching staff that besides just the win-loss column, like when you play against teams like them, that think that could set you up for a better success against the Reynolds and the Robertsons in the conference? You know, what are you looking for in the season? What has been your communication with the team as far as expectations for next year?
We're taking it minute by minute.
Minute
right
by minute.
Now. You know, we're not I've not given Providence Day a whole ton of thought except seeing that the tight end from Reidsville just transferred down there. But, you know, the whole point of having that tough non-conference is so that you've already played those games. You know, when we play Providence Day, when we play Lake Norman, the Dobbins-Bennett experience. Well, I mean, these kids won't play in another atmosphere like that. you know, and that was that's the best high school atmosphere I've ever been in. It's almost sad because you wish that's what high school football should be. You know, it's the town shuts down, everyone's there. You know, the light show, it's all, you know, blacked out, and they're doing the tomahawk chop as they're coming out, largest band in the nation, and it's just it's hard to duplicate that feeling. Yeah, that's why I coach. You know, you do it, try to help these kids and do all that stuff with it. You know, but you can't duplicate that feeling in everyday life. You know, and so, you know, hopefully the tough non-conference, you know, sets us up for success down the road. But are we sitting there worried about it right now? No,
yeah.
Well, we got enough to worry about.
So coming back this year, who are the dudes we need to watch out for?
Well, we got the whole offensive line back. Which is big, you know, and even guys that, you know, spot played and stuff, you know, later on in the season, you know, they were all young as well. And we're actually going to have a very interesting thing happen with the offensive line this year. And we've got some very talented, probably the most talented rising freshman class as a whole group since I've been here. And we're going to – there's some big kids. There's some big kids that are young. And so I'm very curious to see the fall camp – you know, fight for, you know, playing on Friday nights. You know, and I know those varsity guys that played last year are not going to give up their spots easy. Yeah, and it could be a situation where we end up with one of the biggest JV offensive lines in the state. We could have a 6'6" and a 6'7" kid at the two tackles. You know, that are young, that have a ton of promise, and it's just going to be one of the situations of can you beat out that junior or can you beat out that senior? You know, so – and our offensive line is anchored by the twins, Katzen and Prince and Johnny, who've been great ever since they've stepped on campus. Never played football before until they were freshmen and had to kind of throw them in the fire as sophomores. And they were our only two juniors on the offensive line last year trying to hold it together and with a bunch of freshmen and sophomores with them. And they played at about 215, 220. And, you know, now they're both like 245, 250. And that when you go against guys like Huff, it just shows so much. I mean, you can play with as much technique and be as tough and hard-nosed as you want, you know, but 300 pounds is going to throw around 215 pretty easily, you know. We got both our running backs. You know, Nick is going to Guilford, who's also played running back for us last year, but we got our two leading rushers back with Kaheem Plummer and Josh Ellis, and they just – that was one thing I was honestly worried about last year was, you know, the touches at running back. And they just – they don't have a selfish bone in their body about it. They don't care. You know, now I think we got to do a better job this year of getting them both on the field at the same time. You know, both those kids are also going to play defense, but they got to be on the field. Kaheem Plummer's been our bruiser. He's been that since he was a freshman. He's always been a bruiser. And kind of our discussion in the offseason was, man, you're a bruiser at 172 pounds. You know, let's see if we can get you to be a bruiser at 190. You know, because that's your running style, you know, and let's see if we can get there. And he's at 187 right now, you know. And Josh Ellis, he can fly. He can fly. He ran the fastest pro shuttle at the Carolina Combine with a 3.93, just so quick twitch. And he ran a 4.4 flat at Gardner-Webb. He went to Campbell's camp yesterday, and the Campbell coach texted me and said, you know, if he can get up to 170, he's got an offer. You know, so he's about 160 right now. I said, man, if you told me my job was to gain 10 pounds and I'd have an offer, I'd knock that out in a hurry.
Yeah, definitely. But,
I can show him a thing or two.
I'll trade with you, buddy. But you got those two backs back, followed with the offensive line, you know, and then you got the quarterback back who's going to be a three-year starter and just a junior, you know, which you don't happen a lot, you know. You know, some of the biggest questions is going to be out there at receiver. That's where we lost some of our older guys was at receiver. But we've seen some guys step up and step in. We are going to have to play more of our skill guys both ways than what we've had to do in the past. You know, those guys that play some DB and safeties, they're going to have to step over and play some receiver as well and vice versa. You know, so that's got a lot of the offense back. You know, defensively, you know, we return a lot of kids that played. You know, like I told you guys before we got on here, we played 14 different inside linebackers last year.
That's insane.
I don't know if anybody else has done that in the state, played 14 different inside linebackers. But that means we had a lot of kids that got experience at it.
Right.
You know? And then watching their progress in the weight room this offseason, you know, and through spring ball, we got a lot of different ways we can mix and match stuff. You know, and we've changed some stuff up coaching-wise. I'm not calling the offense anymore. Coach Cheek and Coach Clark are handling the offense. Coach Cardillo is calling the defense. I'm just the designated warrior. That's what I've been for 7-on-7s at least. I tried to fly the drone for about a minute, and they'll let the other coaches tell you how that went to try to film it. But But yeah, it's good to change some stuff up. You know, Coach Cheek, he's called defense here for a long time. He's called defense for a long time. And, you know, now he's going to take that defensive perspective and move it over to the offensive line and call the run game. And, you know, he's going to be a head coach here in a little bit. You know, hopefully I can hang on to him as long as I can. But, yeah, and when he becomes head coach, he'll have to call the offense at least when he gets started. So he's going to do a great job with it, you know, with Coach Clark there doing the passing game. And then Coach Cardillo has been with us for 4 years and kind of been Coach Cheek's right-hand man on the defensive side of the football. And so he's ready to step in, you know, as our defense coordinator.
So big offensive line, a bruiser running back, a fast running back, and little thin at receiver. Are you going back to the eye?
Whatever they want to do. I told them to move the football forward. Move the football forward. No, I mean, we want to have some semblance of balance, but at the end of the day, we know that when we get off the mountain, then you have to be able to play mountain football. You've got to be able to pound people. That's what we saw when we had success here, when we were able to, you know, win the first-round playoff game, play, you know, Mallard Creek to a 13-12 game, is that we played that game and 13 personnel. We played that game with three tight ends, and we just pounded because – I mean, we do all these 7-on-7s, and yeah, I loathe 7-on-7. I do. But it does have a lot of good comes out of 7-on-7. I mean, it's, at no point is it realistic. No point does quarterback have 4 seconds, just clear pocket, can see everything.
Never going to happen.
Do most quarterbacks at 7-on-7s look really good?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part. We went down to Chapel Hill last week, and, you know, and we were in there. We had to play Rollsville, Cardinal Gibbons.
Oh, yeah.
You had, you know, Huff, Providence Day, Grimsley. I mean, it was a loaded bracket. And first of all, if you can cover for 4 seconds, then you can cover.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you start. And then, but for me, it's all about bad things happen. Like, how do you handle adversity? How do you handle, are you going to freak out now? Because if you're going to freak out now, then I need to know. You know, because you're going to freak out in the fourth quarter, you know, of a conference game, you know. And then I had a coach tell me this the other day, and it makes a lot of sense. It's the best conditioning you can do for skill guys, because you can take them out there and you can run 15 110s and they can run it, you know.
Yeah.
But they don't run it the same way they run routes, and they don't run it the same way, you know, they're chasing someone down at DB. And so when you're playing those five games in 4 hours, I mean, that's a ton of conditioning work for those guys. And like we've said, a bunch of our guys are going to have to go both ways. So they're going to need that conditioning.
So tell us somebody you got coming up that we've never heard of that's going to be a difference maker, a star on Friday nights.
Yeah, I mean, Caden Ray is special. Caden Ray is special. He came up about halfway through last year. He's been special since he got here. It was always a question of will he figure it out, you know, and – I think it really clicked for him this offseason. You know, he kind of fell in love with the weight room a little bit. Don't want to say, you know, he's 100% in love with the weight room, but he doesn't hate it like he used to.
Yeah.
You know, and he's put on about 15 pounds, and he's a kid that, you know, at that receiver spot, at the slot spot, you know, that can be very electric. You know, I think he had the fastest 40 time. I'm sure Josh Ellis will argue with him over that, you know, because they're both right there neck and neck. But Caden Ray, I think, you know, ran the fastest 40 that we had out here. And he can just be so electric. He's so smooth and effortless, you know, when he catches the ball, when he makes people miss. And so he's a name that I definitely think, you know, is going to have to be a big playmaker for us. Quavo Hayes, he got offered by Pembroke. The other day when we had Pembroke hosted a satellite camp up here at Asheville, which I thought was big.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Pembroke's not easy travel, you know, for a lot of Western North Carolina kids. So they asked if they could come up here and host the camp. And I thought that was good for Western North Carolina as a whole, and it was good for our kids here at Asheville. And they ended up offering Quavo after that camp because he really showed out at it. You know, and he's outside linebacker that, you know, also played corner for us last year, can play safety. You know, he's 6'1", 6'2", long, athletic. You know, you got Kareem Williams, he's committed to Coastal Carolina on the defensive side of the ball. And then Monty Mosley had torn his ACL at the end of his freshman year. He started for us as a freshman. He won us the game against Robbinsville 2 years ago where he caught a ball, made Cutler Adams, who I can, you know, that's one of my favorite kids of all time that I didn't get a coach, you know. But he made Cutler miss in space and housed it. And then he ends up tearing his ACL. He missed his whole sophomore year last year. But he can still run. He is very, very strong in the weight room, and he's about 190 pounds, and we've kind of moved him to more of that linebacker position because that's where I think he's more projectable. He'll play receiver for us too, but I think with his speed and athletic ability at playing Mike Backer, it could be something pretty special.
So conference play, obviously a big deal. Obviously, Asheville Reynolds game, always a high point of every season. And I'm obviously the Reynolds guy. And, you know, Coach Craig loses a bunch of players on defense, but that coach always reloads on defense and gets some together where they're strong on defense. They got Max Guest back and the new quarterback coming in from IMG Academy. How are you guys looking to stack up for that big matchup?
Yeah, they lose kids, but they seem to find them. So yeah. they're gonna be good. They're gonna be good. You know, they always are. You know, and Coach Craig does a good job. He coached me in baseball back in the day. You know, Coach Craig does a good job. Coach Lawless does a good job. You know, we actually were in the office watching that game the other day on the Friday Night Rivals on the YouTube version of it. You know, and I kept making them rewind it back. So I had to, you know, and you watch it a million times on Huddle, but when you watch TV copy, it's just a little different. You know, there's some stuff that you wish you had back in that game, and you just can't afford to make any mistakes, you know, in those rivalry games against good teams. And so it'll be another good game this year. Hopefully, you know, our kids show up, and hopefully the preparation throughout the week is on par for what it should be for that week. And I know we got to go over there this year, which is never easy, but it's fun to be a part of that rivalry game, and I think our kids will be ready for it this year.
Indeed.
So I'm sure Robertson will be good again this year. Who else in the conference you foresee being pretty good?
Yeah, Robertson would be good. You know, Coach Dinwiddie running the triple, you know, it's not easy to defend. It's not easy to prepare for in a, you know, 4-day with high school kids that had a biology exam, you know, on Tuesday type mentality, you know. So Robertson would be good again. They lost a lot of key players for him, but I'm sure they got more coming up. Their JV was pretty good. Their JV, they had some electric backs back there. You know, Irwin returns a lot. You know, they return a lot, and they had us in the crosshairs there late, you know, and we ended up making some good plays late that kind of pulled away from them. But, you know, that was a ball game, and a ball game where I was starting to get worried, you know. And they had us that night, and our kids did a good job stepping up and making plays there at the end. But they returned a lot of people. You know, they're going to be good again.
It could be a spectacular conference season this year.
Yes.
Sounds like it could be fun.
Yeah, I think there's been a few coaches that said, you know, it might not look like it's balanced, but even some of the teams on the bottom end of it that have been on the bottom end, like, are making strides, trying to do things the right way, trying to get their numbers up, and should be to make for more competitive games top to bottom.
Yeah, and that benefits that. I mean, that's great for the area if the conference is really competitive.
It's great for the area. You don't want just one Reynolds Asheville game for all the attendance. Or when I was in high school, I think it was Reynolds and Irwin when the Brown brothers were there. It was just like, you got that one big game. But now North Buncombe, they got 3 wins last year. Is that what we decided they had?
Yes.
Yeah. So I went there. I was in person there when they didn't have a win. So no, it should make for an exciting one. What else do we got for Coach?
So last year you told us a little bit about your leadership class you had going on. I just wondered, you know, a year later, what did that look like? Could you see the benefits of it?
I mean, I think there were benefits of it. I wish I could have seen more benefits of it. But I also think it's not something that you can just harp on for 8 weeks and then turn off, you know. And so we continued doing it. You know, it kind of looked a little different. We didn't have to bring them in at 6:30 in the morning this year with kind of how the schedules were set up. But we dedicated one day every week in the off season to leadership and getting to know your teammates and just, you know, trying to build more team chemistry. And that's one thing that Kaheem Plummer mentioned to me the other day coming back from team camp at Lenoir Ryan is just how much he felt like the team just liked each other. You know, they liked being around each other. And it's something that's probably not valued enough. Especially in high school sports, because, you know, when you're playing for someone you truly care about, you play a little bit harder, you know. And so I think we've made good progress with that. But like I said, starting the leadership academy, leadership class, you know, if you think it's going to get done in 8 weeks and everything's magically going to change, you're wrong, you know. So do I think there's progress off of it? Yes. But do I think it's something that we have got to continue to harp on and continue to grow and build as it goes, you know, and reinforce good leadership, you know, within the team and program? I think it's something that, you know, still has to be at the forefront of what we're trying to do. Because, you know, a coach-led team can only go so far. You know, it's the player-led teams that end up, you know, making the magical runs.
Very true.
We had a fantastic conversation last year, Coach, and subject that you brought up that I've been actually stewing on the whole year. I think it was worth bringing back up again and talking about it. And that goes back to the economics of the area. And you know, Asheville, as beautiful and a wonderful place as it is to come and live and attract people to come here, the economics are starting to obviously get a little bit crazy just to be here in general. Just to live in Asheville or live in Western North Carolina is brutally expensive. And I remember you brought that up last year, as it having an effect on, you know, okay, great, who can afford to bring a family of four here, I think was how you put it, and keep kids coming up through the middle school and into that sort of thing. Any further thought or any other insight on that or that's happened over the past year?
Well, Asheville's not getting cheaper.
No, it's not. And
so, you know, it is hard. It's hard for our families. It's hard for me to get coaches, you know, and I've been very, very lucky to have a great, you know, nucleus of staff that's here with us and has been with us since I've gotten here. But, you know, it's hard to say, hey, man, come rent this place downtown Asheville for $2,500 a month, you know, yeah. Which there goes your teaching, you know, monthly supplement. So it's not getting any cheaper to live here. I'm curious. They've sent out, like, the projected ADMs of what Asheville could look like, you know, in the next 5 years, and you just see a steep drop-off. Now, we go to 8 classifications next year, and I think they've already said they're going to do the Big 32. You know, and, you know, we as the Western North Carolina Coach Association, we've, you know, talked about it a little bit. I'm curious to see what they do with conferences, if they're going to do, if we're going to have to travel, you know, because right now I think we're projected to be 7A, you know, and even though we're going to be 7A this year, you know, when they do the next realignment, we could drop down to 6A, and then the next one we could drop down to 4A. You know, that's how steep the number drop-off is for ADMs, you know, in our district right now. You know, but I know central office is doing a lot of stuff. I know they reached out to the Asheville Youth League, you know, want to get out there with those families, you know, make sure they maintain and build good relationships, make sure those kids that are playing Asheville Youth League football, you know, end up going to our middle schools, end up going to our high schools, and, you know, don't end up like so many of our families that, you know, end up, you know, moving out into the county. So, yeah, I'm very curious to see what it looks like. You know, my plan, like I told you guys, I mean, I got, what, 15 to 17 years so I can retire, and my plan is spend them all here at Asheville. Now, I can't go 5 and 6 many more years, or that won't happen, you know, but, you know, I'm very curious to see how the landscape shifts over the next 5 years with our ADMs.
Yeah, you know, even when you brought up earlier when you were talking about Huff, and you go down off the mountain for the playoffs, and, you know, some of these mountain teams go out onto the field to warm up, and you've got your whole roster out there, and you're staring at a team on the other side that's in numbers just dwarfing what you've got. Certainly in the 4A situation, I noticed that with Reynolds 2 years ago. And I'm sure you saw that with Huff and any other Dobbins Bennett and Providence Day and the University of Alabama and whoever else played.
Yeah, and it's tough. But that's why I'm glad we play some of those schools in non-conference to go ahead and get it out of the kids' heads before we start. You know, they got 99 kids. Like, yeah, they do. You know, and football is one of those sports where numbers do matter. The depth does matter. How you practice matter. I mean, if you got 30 kids and you got 7 of them playing both ways, then, you know, your practice, you can't get done in practice what that school with 100 kids, you know, can get done in practice. You know, you just can't get it done. You know, so you got to be creative and find different ways to do stuff. But, we brought one kid with us last year. He's a freshman. He's 6'6", 315, and you know, I just wanted to bring him with us so that when he got off the bus, that Huff was like, okay, they got one. But Huff had about 10 guys that looked like him, you know. But I wanted that kid to see it and feel he wasn't, you know, necessarily ready to play yet. But I wanted to say, all right, this is what it is. This is what it is.
So you talked a little bit about the conference. Do you prefer that they keep the split conference together with everybody around here, or would you rather be a true 7A and have to do traveling, or – what do you think?
I mean, if you're asking for my personal preference, the least amount of time we can spend on an activity bus, I'm good with. You know, now I've been a part of, you know, having to be in a conference with Watauga, and I was in Central and South Caldwell and all that stuff before. And that's for football, it's one thing. I think you do have to consider the other sports that play Tuesday nights, you know, and think, you know, I mean, I remember playing baseball with Watauga on a Tuesday night.
Coming back from.
And you're just sitting there being like, man, like, I'm not going to first period, you know. And so it's, you know, I think that has to be considered in it. You know, I think the good that could come from it with us is that we do have some natural rivalries right around us of teams that we will play, and that if they're not in our conference, then I won't have to, you know, scour around trying to find non-conference games. You know, I'll be able to pick those up for non-conference. So it'll work out either way, but my preference would obviously be not having to travel an hour and a half on an activity bus for a conference game.
So does 8A fix the problem? Does that help? Does it, you know, it goes back to where we were, what, 2, 3, 4 years ago?
Yeah, honestly, I think if they just did the 4As and then split it up into, you know, big and small, then at least you don't have the whole, we got 3 classifications in a conference.
Right.
It'd be 2, you know, and when you move into playoffs, would it be 3? I mean, it's been that way in the past. But with going ahead and setting it up as 8 classifications, now you have to make the decision of, do I put 3 different classifications in a conference? And if I do that, what are the stipulations for making playoffs? Am I going to have 3 conference champions? You know, or am I just going to go based off RPI? And like I said, there's people in Raleigh or Chapel or wherever they are that are making those decisions, and we'll just roll whatever they come out with. And I know they've thought about all that. But, you know, that's one thing I'm very curious about is if you do go 3 classifications in 1 conference, then how do you make playoffs? You know, is it solely based off RPI, or do you have a 4A conference champ, a 5A conference champ, and a 6A conference champ? You know, and then, you know, how does that play out with everybody else with wild cards? So, it's going to be interesting. And one thing it hasn't, we're not able to make a schedule for next year.
Right.
Yet.
You got to be on hold.
And most of the time right now, people are calling, it's already done, you know, for the most part at this point.
Is it super difficult to create a schedule for, as the Asheville High football coach, is it super difficult for you to find games, or, you know, give us a look inside of that?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Because I can't imagine you just can call every team within an hour that every team would be like, you know what? Yeah, for sure, we'll play you guys.
I mean, it's just, that's the good thing about here is the tradition and the legacy that it has, you know, and we've been lucky to play some, like playing Tuscola, I think is a good game, you know, for us. And I'm happy that, you know, Coach Brookshire, you know, started that, you know, saying, yeah, he's good with it. And then Coach Crompton, you know, remaining good with it. You know, I think it's good for us. It's good for our communities. It's good for Gate, you know, because at the end of the day, we do have to fund, you know, the
everything
athletic
else.
Department.
Yeah.
And that's why I was a baseball coach. I get that. I relied heavily on football's money, you know, to be able to try to buy 12 baseballs, you know. But
it funds everything.
It does, you know. And so I think the Gate has to be considered. So what kind of Gate are you going to get if Asheville's traveling to South Caldwell? You know, how many fans are we truly going to bring to that game, you know, and vice versa. So, I think all that stuff has to be considered. And North Carolina is not easy, especially West North Carolina with how everybody's kind of spread out. You know, now the Big 32 is easy for those Charlotte schools, and they're all right beside each other, and the Raleigh schools. I mean, it's easy for that, you know. But when you start getting down into the smaller groups and trying to figure out, do I put 3? Do we just do 2? Do we just do 1 and say, sorry, buddy, you're 7A?
Yeah.
You know, go figure it out. You know, that's all stuff that's going to come down here in the next little bit, and stuff that I got to be ready for, because I'm going to have to get on the phone and try to snag up the non-conference games as fast as I can.
Yeah, that's going to be – that'll be a wild time when they release the conferences and allow you to do your schedule. That will be wild.
How – that internet browser's got to be well-supported, because there's going to be so many people. I mean, it's going to flood to it. I think that's been the talk for – when did they start this whole –
It's 2 years. It's been going on for 2 years.
Been going on for 2 years? Yeah. Not as long as I-26 construction, but
close. Getting there.
Getting there for sure.
Coach, hey, you know, we talked about obviously Shaw going on and the young man going on to Montana. You already mentioned you've got some other players that are going to be going up, the young man going to Coastal Carolina and stuff. You know, they had that legislation that just passed with the college level, with the Power 5 and you know, the NIL situation and the portal had already been messing things up quite a bit at the high school level for recruiting. How do you what picture are you seeing paint on that side of it?
It looks like they're going to, you know, and this, I'm not the most educated person to be speaking on this. Let me preface it with that. But, you know, it looks like they're going to be going to more of a revenue sharing type situation and trying to get rid of NIL collectives. You know, now the kids are going to get paid. You know, where they're getting paid from, it may change, but they're going to get paid, you know, especially those guys in those major conferences. I know they're doing a big basketball one out in Las Vegas, and, I mean, that's where the whole talk started with the revenue share aspect with it. So, you know, it does make it harder on the high school kid. It makes it harder on the high school recruiting process. The biggest thing they can do right now is try to find a way in somewhere. Get your foot in the door somewhere. If you play well and produce, you know, and you're able to move up, you know, and get paid to get moved up, then yeah, go do it, you know. But yeah, and it probably won't be long till NIL becomes a a thing in high school in North Carolina. I know that they've shot it down, you know, but they've shot it down for now. It'll become something at some point, you know, but how many people would affect, you know, how many people can really afford to pay high school kids, you know, and when coaches are making, you know, pennies an hour,
right.
You know, that makes it a little hairy too, you know? So, but it does there's another rule they passed too, that, where college coaches this offseason could only come by one time. There used to be two. You used to get two evaluations. You got an academic evaluation and an athletic evaluation. And this year they changed it to one. And it just – it hurts high school kids. And I asked a coach that was in here. I was like, why – in every rule that the NCAA seems to be making, it seems to be helping the, you know, players out. You know, but this rule in particular hurts kids. You know, the coach only gets one evaluation, and we don't have the luxury of doing spring practice in April. You know, we have to do spring practice later on in May. You know, we got kids running track, got kids playing baseball. You know, we don't have field availability. So we have to go, but we back it up right into the dead period. And a lot of colleges are, you know, trying to get off the road by then. And then they're having to make special trips out here. And one of the coach told me, he said, it's every rule is designed to help the portal kid. And it's not necessarily the high school kid they're worried about, you know. And so, and one thing I saw is that we have less people that are recruiting our area, like area coaches. The coaches that were coming out to see our kids were position-based. You know, it wasn't necessarily he has that area, so he's going to go check on them first, make sure everything checks out, and then bring the safeties coach back. You know, no, it was the safeties coach showing up because he had to see Kareem. You know, it was the running backs coach showing up because he had to see Kaheem or Josh. It was the specific position coaches, and that puts a lot of stress on them because they now don't have an area where they can go hit a bunch of schools and learn some about kids, you know, and meet with coaches and talk. Because a lot of things that coaches ask me, and I'm always very upfront and honest with it, is who else in the area can play, you know, which if I was a college coach, that's a question I would ask, because I know the high school coach may say something else, you know, but if I talk to the people that they play against, they're going to tell me, you know, the guys that can go play in the area. And we just don't see that. We didn't see that as much this year. Now, we didn't have less foot traffic. You know, we still had a lot of coaches come by, which was great. But them not being able to come by twice, you know, I think, you know, made things more difficult for kids. I really do.
You know, I don't know enough about it yet to speak too intelligently on that whole whole case that played out with the conferences. But one thing I noticed is that it affected Power 5, G5, and then all the way down to Division 1 FCS, it looked like, for those sports. And it occurred to me, does that create an opportunity then if you're potentially calling that no longer amateur sports, does that kind of elevate your Division II, your NAIA, thank you, or Division III prospects, that kind of thing, and put them more into that amateur and more elite situation?
100%. I mean, it's farm league. It's Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, yeah, farm league. I mean, that's what it is. You know, and D2 football's always been good.
Yeah.
You know, but it is about to be better than it has ever been, because you're going to have elite 18-year-olds out there playing that their goal is not to be there when they're 19. You know, they're trying to get there, perform well, and then leave and go make money. You know, so D2, you know, a big thing for us is NAIA. I love NAIA schools because they can give money.
Yeah.
D3 cannot give any football money, you know, or athletic money. NAIA can't, you know. So it's going to be D2 football, and the lower level football is going to be filled with very talented high school kids that are sitting there. But I always thought it would be tough, you know, just watching the Asheville Tourists ride up here down the road and be like, man, I bet it'd be tough to be a manager, you know, for the Asheville Tourists, because you ask a kid to bunt, and say, no, I can't get moved up to Double A if I bunt. You know, I got to hit home runs. You know, so at what point is D2 schools going to start seeing that same mentality? And football being the greatest team sport ever created, you know, it's hard to have a bunch of selfishness within the sport, you know, and have success. So very curious to see how that plays out, because, you know, you are going to have some selfishness of kids being like, no, I need these touches, you know, or I won't, you know, be able to go into the portal and go where I want to go. The only good thing I will say about the portal is that I think kids end up where they should have been, you know. So if they were under recruited, you know, and they end up going to a smaller school and they perform well, then they end up getting where they should have been at the end of it. On the same token, if a kid was recruited purely based off of measurables and, you know, very okay football players, just tall and long and athletic, doesn't get a lot of run at the Division I level and ends up having to transfer down to D2, probably where he should have been. So, I mean, I think it all works itself out. I just hate that, you know, the kids have to go through it, and then you got to consider the academic piece at some point, you know, and say, you know, what is his degree in, you know, and how many of those classes transfer over. You know, so I think the people that honestly have it best right now, one of my best friends is the offensive coordinator at William & Mary, Mario Acatelli. You know, we went to App together, been good friends for a long time. Those high academic schools, they have it the best right now because they don't worry about transfer portal. And those kids that are going to those high academic schools, they're not worried about getting in the portal. They're worried about getting the degree. You know, so, you know, will they lose one or two to the portal? Maybe every so often, but it's not as big of a deal as it is at a lot of these schools right now. So the higher academic schools, you know, I think those college coaches are a lot less stressed, you know, even though they can't recruit the same wide net of players that some of these other schools can because they have to have that 3.5 GPA and they have to have this test score and this, that, and the other. But they know once they get them on campus, they're not having to continually recruit them. You know, they're not having to sit there and be like, man, we got to play him because if he doesn't play, he's going to transfer. And I heard a coach tell me this, that, you know, for the first time ever, because my rule's always been if a freshman is the exact same as a junior, I play the freshman. You know, if they're the exact same, I play the freshman because I got more time with him. You know, their rule now in college is, you know, if the junior and the freshman are the exact same, they play the junior. Because if they give the freshman film, he's gone. You know, he's going to enter the portal and gone. Now you have a hole in your roster that you have to fill. You can't fill that with an 18-year-old. You have to fill that out of the portal as well. You know, so it's changing how they do things. You know, and we just kind of get, at the high school level, we get what's left over from that whole situation, you know. And we're still working hard and getting our kids opportunities. But it is so much more difficult than what it was 5-10 years ago.
So you talked about NIL, and before we came on, we talked about well, you even mentioned as we started the kid transferring to Providence Day, the tight end, because of NIL money, because the private schools can do that. Do you see that coming over to the public schools?
I don't know. And I don't want to speculate on that. It may not be for NIL. It may just want the opportunity to go to Providence Day, but I know that, you know, the private schools can, you know, provide that, you know, and a kid that may be one of the first 5-star football and basketball players, you know, ever type deal, you know, I'm sure there's money to be made out there. You know, could it come to the public schools? Probably at some point, but I don't know who it truly benefits. You know, I honestly could see like smaller town, you know, schools. Right. I could see like the Dobbins Bennett where the town closes down football and they care so much about high school football. When I was at Chase, you know, and I mean, it was great experience, great high school football because there was nothing else to do in Henrietta on Friday night. You know, you went out to the game, you know, and so that star running back, that star quarterback, yeah, you go do a car commercial in that area and that'd be a big deal. You know, at a bigger city like Asheville, I don't know. You know, I don't know how much that truly plays in. Yeah, and the only reason why I think it's a big deal, you know, in the college game is because there's so much money.
Yeah.
In the college game. They're not a ton of money.
They're not high school.
You wouldn't think so.
Nope. I mean, we're trying to run an athletic department out of it. You know, it's not a ton of – we do a ton of fundraising.
You would have to have a big booster or
– you would have to have somebody –
alumni, somebody who really loved the football program.
And, you know, and it's tough in a team game, team sport, and – no one's better than anybody else. Everyone's working, you know, but that kid's making, you know, $20,000. You know, I could see that. I could see that becoming an issue. Sure. You know?
So you mentioned the transfer portal and NIL, kind of to tie that all together. What about kids in this area jumping around from school to school? Do you see that as a problem? And if so, how do we fix it?
I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
I don't care. If you want to play for me, great, man. If you don't want to play for me, good luck to you, you know, wherever you may go. You know, I don't care. Because if I start caring about that, then I'm going to have to care about 10 other things. You know, I want to worry about the kids that are here that want to be here, that want to be Asheville Cougar, that trust in me and my coaching staff and say, Coach, I mean, I know you're going to develop me as a player but also a person. You know, how can you help me? You know, and that's the kids I want to be around. Like I said, you know, if you think you can get, you know, something better somewhere else and you want to go do that, I'm fine with that. I don't care. I want to coach kids that want to be here and want to be a part because it is a special thing to be here. It really is.
I agree. That's a great answer.
Well, Coach, I'm about out of questions. Mike, should I transfer over to a more of a fun question or you got another one?
So one thing we didn't talk about was staff changes. Any new staff coming in this year, or losing any guys, or?
Well, I'll run down through the list with you. You know, I mean, like I said, we changed some things around. Like I said, I'm not calling the offense anymore, which I'm sure a lot of people will be very excited about, especially our fans. So on the offense side, you know, Kobe Rudisell, last time we talked, he was going down to Houston to be a defense coordinator.
That's right.
I have worked hard to try to get him to come back home. And he has come back, and he's going to coach quarterbacks. You know, so he's been on the defensive side. He's been a defense coordinator. Now he's going to coach quarterbacks. And like I said, it gives a different perspective, very similar to Cody Cheek, who has been a defense coordinator for 10, 12 years, last 4 years here, and he is going to coach offensive line. You know, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame at North Buncombe as an offensive lineman about a month ago. He's going to do a great job with him and great job with the run game. And he has some different ideas than me, which is huge. It's important, you know, because if you do the same thing over and over, a lot of times you can get into a rut, you know, and it can become redundant, you know, and I think you know, kind of change it up a little bit and splash some new blood in there, I think is good for the program. So like I said, you got Kobe, at quarterbacks, you got Gene Hammonds at running backs, and, you know, Gene, he's been here.
How many years has he been at Asheville High?
He'll never tell you. He's been here as long as anybody has. So he can tell you everybody that's come through. You know, he can't. He's coaching running backs. Darrell Clark, who coached quarterbacks the past 2 years, is moving to tight ends. And he's going to coordinate the passing game. Chavis Williams is back for, you know, fifth straight year at receiver coach. And like I said, Cody Cheek and Bill Silver will do offensive line. On the defensive side, Jake Cardillo will be coaching DBs and calling the defense. We got a guy, Coach Pye, who just moved in, from Kentucky. Moved in from Kentucky, and he reached out to me, and he came in, met with him, and he's going to be a huge asset for us. He played his college ball at Wake Forest, he's a part of, I think, Cooperwood Financial. He manages professional athletes' money.
Wow.
There's
your NIL guy. What are we talking about?
He told me he's going to be gone every year during the combine because that's where he has to go and meet clients. And I'm like, that's fine, man. that's fine. You know, but I think it's going to be great for us and our kids to have that guy around.
Sure.
You know, to be able to give advice.
Absolutely.
You know? So those two guys will be doing the secondary. Coach Brown will be doing inside backers. Coach Swain will be doing outside backers. And then Coach Mickey Ray will be doing D-line. And Coach Bradley Haynes, new guy we added on staff, he – played here, was a captain here on the state championship team. He joined staff, and he's going to help out with defensive line as well. And he's done a great job this summer with the kids already. So, and then me, I'm gonna focus on special teams. I got to do something. So I'm gonna focus a lot of my time and energy on special teams and making sure that we're good in that area.
So you mentioned your youth league a little bit, and your middle school a little bit. How close are you working with those guys now? I know middle school, Asheville High, is traditionally fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Buchanan does a fantastic job at the middle school. To the point this offseason, it's like, hey, man, I need you to come help me at the high school, man. I need you to come on up, you know. But he does such a good job down there, and he loves it down there. He loves those kids down there. And the kids that are coming out, like I said, we have our rising freshman class is just so talented. And we have a great mix of big kids and skill kids in that rising freshman class. And kind of my challenge to them was to stick together, because you get classes that have good linemen, you'll get classes that have good skill, but you very rarely get them together, you know. And we've played a lot of those young kids. We took three of them to Chapel Hill with us, you know. And, you know, Jamalachi Skye's rising freshman, he played a ton at Chapel Hill, and he's probably one of the more talented skilled freshmen that I've ever had. But Coach Buchanan, Coach Zibby, and all those guys down at the middle school do a fantastic job of getting those guys ready. I think one thing that really helped us as a whole program was this December, this past December, I was the head coach for the 8th grade U Shrine Bowl. It was me. I took Chavis Williams, my wide receiver coach, with me, and then it was Coach Buchanan, Coach Zibby, and Coach Weaver, three guys down in the middle school. I think it was a lot of fun for us three or us five, you know, to work there together for a week, you know, because we have a good relationship and we talk and stuff. But for us to sit there and coach football together and try to figure out how to put a game plan in, you know, to 12 and 13-year-olds in 4 days, you know, and have any success with it, you know, and we ended up winning. And it was pretty cool because it was on Nickelodeon and the whole thing. It was a cool deal. It really was. I was skeptical going into it, you know, but it was actually a really, really, really good deal. And we were able to take a lot of our – we took, I think, 5 or 6 of our middle schoolers down there to play in it, and they showed out really, really well. You know, and then Coach Bolanos down there with the youth league, he's doing a fantastic job. You know, I know Coach Pruitt spoke about it. Danny Wilkins did the Western North Carolina Youth Clinic, which I thought was huge. I thought that was a great thing. And it's not, you know, us as high school coaches, like, we know more. We don't know anymore. You know, but here's some stuff that's worked for us in the past, you know, and here's some drills. And because you go to these clinics and a lot of coaches want to talk scheme, and none of us coaches taught any scheme. You know, you got to do what your kids can do. But here's some drills, you know, because me as a coach, that's what I want. I want some different drills. I want some different coaching points on drills. I want some different details of what I can talk to the kid about the drill. You know, and for our Asheville Youth League, we had 14 coaches there. We had the largest turnout of any of the youth league programs, you know, at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. You know, I thought that was huge for us. And a lot of credit has to go to Coach Bolanos and the guys he's working with. You know, we're going to try to do what we did last year again, where the first 3 days of, like, fall camp for the youth league, you know, last year we went out there as the high school staff and we ran the drills with the youth league coaches there with us. But, you know, we were out there with them, you know, and doing different drill work and just starting at the basics and how to build, you know, to create building blocks of saying, all right, let's start with this, you know. And then as you progress, if you do this at 8 years old, I need you to add this to it at 10 and then this to it at 12. And then when you're 14 up here with me, you know, the foundation is set, you know, and now we can really build on it. You know, so I'm very pleased with how the organization is right now, because it can't just be a high school thing. It can't be. Not if you want to have truly, you know, sustained success with it. It's got to be starting from when they're playing pups at 5 and 6 and they're just little kids running around in helmets and the coach has got to line them up, and, you know, all the way up to when they're 18. You know, it's got to be one organization. And I think everyone's kind of bought in with that, you know, and like I said, no one sits there and has any egos with it, you know, and everyone's just trying to get better, you know. And that's something that I'm really happy with what's happening right now here at Asheville.
That's good. I know at one time Asheville's Youth League had kind of, over COVID, didn't they shut down? It kind of went to travel?
Yeah, it did. I honestly think that's kind of going away a little bit. Now, there'll still be some semblance of travel, but, you know, it's not always easy to go play 4 or 5 football games in a weekend. It's hard. We can play one game a week, and it's hard doing that, you know, to play 4 or 5 in a weekend. Very difficult.
And to drive a couple hours to do it.
Yeah, and I think our parents in this area, are really, like, we got good, dedicated coaches at that youth league level that, you know, are trying to, you know, instill, you know, not only let's be good people, you know, at 8 years old, let's be good kids that do things right away and take coaching and, you know, be good listeners and do all that stuff. But also getting those skills that will help them later on. You know, I know they've started a flag league up here. You know, and I want our kids to do everything. I want them to play basketball. I want them to play baseball. I mean, this was really the first year that my kids were involved in youth sports. You know, I mean, my daughter played a little bit of soccer, but this year she played basketball and then softball. And my son played T-ball, if you want to. I mean, he was out there. I don't know if he really played, but he was out there. Played with the dirt. That's what he did.
Yeah.
But it was good for me to kind of see, because, I mean, I didn't want to coach it. I wanted to stay back and kind of watch it from a parent's perspective, you know, and – it really just helped me, you know, see what we could do in our program to continue to improve it. You know, and the good thing is I think we got the right men in place here at, you know, the high school, the middle school, and the youth league that all have the same goals of what we want this to become.
Yeah, I mean, that's important. I think you can see that around the area, that some of those strong youth leagues and strong middle schools, it's got to equate to good high school teams.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, like I said, is keeping those kids together. You know, and you want them to be together. You want them to grow up playing with each other and, you know, and having those relationships, because that's every time when we have the senior night and stuff like that, a lot of those kids that have played together for all those times, you know, starting back at 8 years old, they talk about it. And they talk about it. They can pinpoint games by the Youth League Super Bowl, you know, when they were 9 years old, and they sit there and talk about it. And so you want those kids to have those experiences.
Absolutely. So, Coach, what have we not asked you about Asheville football we need to know?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we've, like I said, 5 and 6 is no good. Stop 5 and 6, no good. Let's not do that again. I mean, it's a different part for me in my career. You know, I mean, I took over the Chase job when it was struggling. And you know, we got very lucky with a very talented group of kids. And at that time, those kids would leave and go to East Rutherford or Thomas Jefferson, some of the surrounding schools. And so our biggest battle was keeping our kids there, you know, and we were able to do that for a couple of years. You know, and Chase has still had success, you know, and that's fun for me to see. And then I come up to Asheville when it had kind of struggled a little bit, and, you know, and, you know, and able to come in and kind of change it around. And, we saw that happen and have some success. And then, you know, now I'm getting to the point where how do you sustain it? You know, how do you build a program? And where, like I said, I want to be here for the next 15 years. How do you sit there and be successful year in, year out? I know success can look different, you know, to each year based off the team, you know. You know, I think I mentioned to you guys last year, I mean, you can be, you know, you can have a 12-win team that underperforms, honestly, and you can have a 4-win team that played way above their head, you know. But, you know, how can you be consistently good year in, year out, you know? And so one thing we did this offseason is I treated it like I was taking a new job. You know, I was like, I ain't got to go anywhere. We got 5-6 program right here I need to fix, you know. And so that was kind of how we approached it. And like I said, we harped on everything. I mean, there was no more, I forgot my shoes, can I work out in my slides, stuff in the way. I mean, none of that stuff that I had ended up letting slide a little bit, you know, none of that stuff was any longer acceptable. You know, these kids will tell you they did a ton of hill sprints, weighted vest hill sprints, or for anything. You're late. You know, yeah, wait. I mean, our whole thing was, you know, you're weighing down the team. You know, we're going to weigh you down with a 20-pound weighted vest, and you're going to run up the hill, you know. And so we had less kids miss class. You know, we had less kids skip class. We had less kids be late to class, you know. And so that's kind of how we treated this offseason. You know, like I said, that's a very fun group to be around because they do have the right mindset right now. They are bought in. We had Mondays, you know, for us, for the most part in the summer, are optional. Like, it's a makeup day. Like, you know, you're going to miss, you're going on vacation, you may want to hit a Monday. That way you can get all your days in. You know, Mondays we do some auxiliary lifts. We do, you know, some different sprint stuff that we don't normally do during the week. And then a lot of the stuff we do on the field afterwards is player-led. Because I tell them when they get to college, and you're going to have the strength coach with you over the summer. That's it. You know, and you're about to have a 10-day break where I can't be with you. You know, if you don't do anything for 10 days, you're probably wrong. You know, so what are you going to do, you know, over these next 10 days? So today, you know, in the past, we've had maybe 5 or 10 guys come to the makeup optional lift day. Today, we had like 31 come just, and all those guys didn't really need the makeup days. They're just here because they wanted to get extra work in. Yeah, and that's good for me to see. And it's good for me to see my older offensive line take some of the younger offensive line on the field after we get done sprinting and say, all right, this is player-led drill stuff. You know, I'm going to sit here and watch it, and I'll get any bag or anything that you want me to get out. You know, but I want to see if you know what we're doing well enough, you know, to be able to go work on it on your own. Because, like I said, after this week, we go into a dead period, and then we're 1 week on, and then we go into another dead period. You know, so it is, you know, can you go out there, you know, and work, you know, without me breathing down your neck? And will you work on stuff that we need to work on, or are you just going to go out to the field and just throw the ball around? There's a difference, you know, and so it was good for me to kind of observe that and watch that today. Some of our older guys take some of the younger guys and put them through some different drills and say, hey, man, this is what we're working on here, you know. And then tomorrow, Tuesday through Thursday, we have one group lift at 9 while one group runs. At 10, we switch, and at 11 o'clock, we practice. I mean, it's a hard 3 hours, you know, but, you know, we need another good turnout this week like we've had the past 2 weeks, and finish June strong going, because July's tricky with 2 dead weeks. It's hard to get a lot stronger in the weight room because we can't open the weight room, can't open the field or anything like that during the dead weeks, you know, by the state. So,
and then the season's here like that.
And the season's here, yep. You know. So that's, you know, finishing June strong is big for us.
So we've talked to a lot of the other coaches in the conference. You're definitely the youngest coach in the conference.
Oh, yeah.
In 5 years, you may be the only coach left that's currently in the conference. What's that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily talk about it a lot, but I sit here and I look around this conference table when I'm sitting here having my coaches meeting, and I'm like, I'm going to coach against all these guys here in a little bit. You know, all my younger coaches, you know, that are very good football coaches, they're going to take those jobs, you know, and you're going to have Cody Cheek and Daryl Clark and Kobe Russo and Jake Cardillo and probably a few more of them, Chavis Williams out there, you know, being the head coach at – Irwin, TC, Reynolds, North Buncombe, wherever in this area. You know, it's going to be interesting at that point, you know, 10 years down the road to look back and be like, hey, we're all on the same staff together, you know. But that's what's good, you know, for us here is that we have a good core group of young coaches that are going to be the next head coaches in this area, you know. And so for me, you know, knowing that that's coming, it's just appreciating the time we have, you know, together right now.
That could definitely change the dynamic of some of these rivalry games.
It probably intended. Practice gets pretty heated out there sometimes, so it definitely wouldn't lack tension, you know. But it would be fun. It'd be fun for me because I have had a lot of coaches that's helped me out along my journey, and that's my goal is to pay it forward and to help these guys out like coaches have helped me, you know. So nothing would make me happier, honestly, than to be in a conference coaching against all the guys that, you know, I used to coach with.
Well. Pat?
Yeah, so you already mentioned you got the two dead weeks coming up in July, and y'all are killing it right now working and stuff. So do you get to go anywhere on your own and take a vacation, or what does that look like?
I do. It's my favorite week of the year. We now Coach Cardillo is getting married on Friday.
Wow.
So that kind of that puts a one-day hold on the beach. But, you know, most of the time Thursday, last Thursday in June, right before the dead week starts, we load up the van and we go. And we go down to Palm Coast, Florida, and we go down there and try not to get sunburned. And, you know, it's a good time for me and my family. And now, like I said, since I've got 8-year-old daughter, 5-year-old boy, and a 3-month-old boy. And he is awful in the car. And so we don't know what we're going to do. He will not. He hates being in the car seat. He hates it. Like the other kids, they were fine with it. Because if it was just me and the two older kids, we could drive down to Florida 7 hours easy. Him, I don't know. I talked to my wife, like, y'all two want to fly?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
y'all,
that's an idea.
I'll take all the stuff down. Y'all two want to fly down there? That may be better. But that's my favorite week of the year. You know, my parents go down. Get to play a little golf with my dad, and you know it's a good time.
Nice, Mike. Did they do any car racing down there?
I'm not exactly sure where that is. Where
it's just north of Daytona.
Yeah, so yes, definitely.
Yes, clearly in Daytona.
Yeah, I'll be in Florida this Friday racing at Five Flags in Pensacola. So
that'd be good.
And dinner at Peg Leg Pete's.
Peg Leg Pete's.
That's
yes,
your favorite
absolutely.
Place to eat on the planet.
Yes. It'll be very hot.
Yeah, indeed.
It's a hot week out here this week.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a few hot weeks here. You know, we're in Chapel Hill. I mean, it was 90 out there. It was hot, but that's good.
How many camps do you take your kids to?
So we do team camp it's been at Gardner Webb this year. It was at Lenoir Ryan. And it was early in the summer this year, which was honestly good because when you do it kind of later in the summer, it's like 13 or 14 7-on-7s. And when you've already had 15 7-on-7s, it just becomes a lot. You know, but when it's your first ones and it's just so much teaching getting done, it was very, very good for us. You know, and then we went to Chapel Hill. We went over to Hendersonville and went against J.L. Mann in Hendersonville. And J.L. Mann had just come back from Chapel Hill, school down in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and they had won it, you know, that tournament they were at Chapel Hill. So, you know, we went against them to kind of see. I thought that was good for us, kind of a warm-up going up there. We go there, like I said, we had a tough little bracket with Rollsville and Cardinal Gibbons. You know, and then when we get back from break, we'll go to Winston-Salem State. We went there last year, and that was a great one. They did a great job with running that one. Like I said, we try to push HBCUs here at Asheville and try to make sure HBCUs come up and look at our kids. You know, like I said, we got JJ going to NC Central, and we got Jay Avery, who's at A&T right now. You know, so now I'm trying to get Winston-Salem State to look at our kids. And so we'll do that one. And then we have the sports outreach one here on Thursday when we get back. And then the next dead week, we go to one on Tuesday. And like I said, it's a ton of 7-on-7s. You don't fire anybody during 7-on-7s. You know, you don't. You can't. That's one thing Mike Sexton taught me is you never fire a DB from 7-on-7s. Now, the one thing we do look at is effort. You know, are you going to get beat for a touchdown? Sure. You know, but are you chasing after him or not? You know, and you know, so, and it gets us in good shape. You know, so as bad as I hate it, bad as it's not real football, it does, you know, provide some of those things that I need to see as coach. Because if you'll quit on me during 7-on-7, you're going to quit on me, you know, and I need to know that now.
What about your linemen? What do you do for those guys?
Man, those poor guys, they had to go. They went to Lenoir Ryan with us this year, and they just – it's one of those situations where, you know, our line coaches were there, but they have some line coaches there that kind of run it. And I think a lot of it is they just try to keep them busy, you know, while everyone else playing 7-on-7. And they come back just dead tired. I'm like, man, I'm sorry, guys. But it's they have a good time with it. And then, you know, they obviously don't go to the 7-on-7, so they just stay here and work. So it's important to have that key nucleus. And we finally have, you know, a big lineman group. Like a big – I mean, we got 25, 30 linemen.
Nice. That's, you're the only one we're hearing that
we
from.
Got, yeah.
Everybody else needs linemen.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's good for us. we may go into a game with starting 9 offensive linemen, you know, but we do have linemen here right now. And that, and it's not, you know, 160-pound kids that I'm like, hey, man, have you ever thought about playing guard? You know, it's you know, we got decent, not monsters, but we got decent-sized kids out there playing offensive line. And it's a core, good core group that works well together, you know, so they stay behind and – the, you know, O-line coach and D-line coach will work them out when we're gone at 7-on-7s. And they're just a – we split them up. We used to do JV and varsity. One group, like varsity run, JV lift and switch. But this year we split them up between linemen and skill because I want the young linemen working out with the older linemen. Not necessarily in the same rack, not doing the same weight, but I want them to see how it should be done. You know, same thing with the skill guys. And I think that's going to help us out down the road.
Well, good deal. Coach, thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, Coach Court Radford from the Asheville Cougars, thanks for your time. This has been awesome. I was learning a lot when I talked with you, that's for sure. Mike, we're back up again. Who's the next coach? West Henderson.
West Henderson's coach.
Yeah, West Henderson. And we're doing that. It'll be up next week, so we'll be set up and dial that in. So tune in for that one. And football season will be here before you know it. Until then, tune in to Behind the Beard WNC. Hopefully we have some good stuff for you. Until then, take care.